Amy Guth and Domati Pongo. We're here tonight on Nightside. Hello, Domati.
Hey, Amy. How you doing?
It's a flurry of activity as we're running. Like, the Patty's running out with some Thanksgiving situation, and like we're coming in. It's chaos. But
it is. Welcome back.
Thank you. Really, to follow on what was said a minute ago, really awesome job today from you,
you
on that story from Mercy Hospital, which we're going to be talking about tonight. We're going to just keep having that conversation is what we're doing. So, that's the part of our business that I think is such an interesting one, in that we, you know, sometimes just have to go, nope, we're going a different direction. This thing has happened. We need to go out there and jump on it and see what's happening.
This morning, I was in this morning doing news in the morning, and by the time around 3 o'clock, we started to hear these reports between 3 and 3:30, I think it was. We started to hear these reports about possible active shooter situation at Mercy Hospital. And when the newsroom were figuring it out, and you know, when you first get those things, you get these chills through your body because you don't know how bad it is. You don't know if there's another mass shooting situation. You really don't know what is going to happen with it. So,
and even in the first seconds, there's a part of you that's always like, I hope this is a hoax.
Yes.
Like this, there's something, even though we've covered so many of these, there's still a part that's always like, is it real?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So the first thing you try to do is verify it. Mm-hmm. You hope it's a hoax. Then the numbers start coming in about how many people were shot.
Right.
And then they make the decision, okay, are we going to go out there and check this out? And I went out there, and it's always difficult to report on the situation because the information that comes in is so fluid. But also it's such an emotional experience when you talk to people who have been through this type of thing. So it's, how do I get the information I need? Get the amount of empathy that I need from this person as well. And
right.
It's a draining thing. And, and if it's draining for me, just telling the story, imagine what it's like to people who are at the hospital.
Right. Witnessing that and all that.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, we've been talking about this story all night, of course, and I think a lot of people are talking about it. It's all over social media. You know, I mean, this is another, and let me start by saying, you know, it's easy to get into a very polarized debate here, we're not going to go there. We're not going there. This is not about, we're not talking about guns right now. That's not what we're doing. We're not having a gun debate. I don't want to go there, but I do want to talk about, this is another situation in which, you know, we've since learned that this was the ex-fiance of one of the women who were killed.
Yeah.
It's another situation in which a woman cannot tell a man no.
Right.
Without fatal consequences. And it's so terrifying. I mean, you know, so take the other end of that, where the people go, women can't negotiate. No, we get murdered.
Right.
We push back against men sometimes. First of all, I don't think that's accurate. I think women can negotiate fine.
Right.
I think women are really good at reading the room and knowing when there will be consequences for negotiating. But I just, you know.
But you touch on the fact that there's trepidation about what those conversations are like. I mean, that's something I don't even have to think about in any situation, right? I mean, you talk about if a woman tells a guy, no, what can happen, right?
That's right.
I've never been concerned about what would happen if I said no. Never. I've never had to worry about that. And so, I don't know. It's hard to process and digest if something like this happens. And then not only that, but people who had nothing to do with this relationship, nothing to do with this guy, had to pass away just because he couldn't take no for an answer.
That's right.
I don't know. I don't know how to process it. We're putting this show together because the thing that happens, and this is, a little peek behind the wall in the radio business. The thing that happens, you know, you kind of blow up whatever it was that you were planning to do when things happen. And I started to call around and I wanted to talk to a psychiatrist or a psychologist about how can you tell when you're in an abusive relationship or destructive relationship? Because a lot of relationships are abusive verbally, but perhaps not physically, or maybe even verbally, but subtly. Right. Like, I mean, People give abusive language, and how many times have we gotten into arguments with someone and you don't think that they're crazy or that they're really mad, I'm gonna kill you, and they say, I'm gonna you I wonder if one day I want us to figure out. I felt like today might not have been, you know, we're talking about it all day. Maybe today yeah. wasn't the day for it, but I do want to figure out how we can have this conversation about how to understand when danger might be afoot, especially when it involves someone you love. You don't want to mm-hmm. admit that that person might be a danger to you.
Well, that's the thing. You know, so many times after, especially like a shooting or an incident like this with fatalities, in which there at its heart is about a domestic abuse situation. So often this narrative will emerge of, oh, he didn't have a record, or, oh, he was such a nice guy, or, oh, he was this,
right?
As if, you know, people were shocked. But, you know, it's so rare we hear a case, but we do sometimes, in which, you know, a relative of the woman who perished will say, you know what, she told me if anything ever happens to me, he did it. We do hear that sometimes.
That does
but
happen.
Not that often.
But not that often.
It's usually like, you know, I think it's a, there's probably a very human tendency to want to say, I'm not in the as bad a situation as I think I am. Mm. There's probably something that our brain does to protect us. Mm-hmm, and it's like, mm-hmm. this person looking at me in the eye, there's no way he mm-hmm. could ever really hurt me. He just loses his cool sometimes.
Right.
You know,
right,
there's probably right. like a justification, I don't know, or, you know, a way to rationalize.
No, that's a good conversation to have, though, because I wondered if, in cases like these, how often do we hear that the woman gave a cry for help about the man at some point and right. said that, I always had, but I never, you're right. I never really hear people say that she warned me about this guy. It's usually a shock to everyone. And it's usually in the movies, and it's not real life, but in the movies, it's usually the nicest, most debonair guy. And then they zoom in and he does something weird with his eyes. And you're like, ooh, right. he's crazy.
Right. Oh, that's the violins changed. That's yes. how I know.
Yes. In real life, there aren't any violins, and we don't have the close-ups and we don't know. So, I was going to talk about what it was like as I approached the scene. It happened at 26th in Michigan. And I'm walking up. That's where Mercy Hospital is. And I'm walking up the street, and it's really daunting to be around an active shooter situation when it's still happening, because you don't know exactly what it is. We'd heard the rumors about it possibly being a domestic situation. And I don't know if you saw this report, Amy, that he reportedly shot the woman in the parking lot three times, stood over her body, shot her again multiple times, and then walked in the hospital and shot others in the hospital. So the portions of the hospital were being evacuated. And so I'm walking down the street, and I see two women pushing a man, an elderly man in a wheelchair, walking down the street, but they're on the phone. One of them is on the phone talking about everything that happened. And so, you know, I'm looking at the woman. I'm like, hey, are you okay? Do you mind talking to us? What did you see? What happened? And I pulled out the recorder, and this is what she told me.
Boys, I know the guy was running out the shooter was running down the hall shooting, and the nurse said, get in the room, it's a shooting, somebody got killed, get in. And we got in the room and cut off all the phones and laid on the floor until the police come and got us out the room and led us across the street.
How long did that go on before they finally allowed you guys to leave the hospital?
Maybe about a half hour. I didn't know what to think. I'm still shaking.
Yeah. And the first thing I thought about were all of the people inside the hospital that couldn't move.
That's
because
right.
now they had
That's
to,
exactly what I was just thinking about.
Yeah. Because now they had to get this guy. He's in a wheelchair. They're walking down the street, and they were blocks and blocks away from their car because King Drive was right. sectioned off. And she said, we probably won't be able to get to King Drive for another 4 hours or so. So we can't get to our car. You know, we'll figure out what to do next. And so it's just a harrowing situation. I thank God for the Chicago Police Department, because many more could have died in this shooting. And I don't know, our hearts go out to the four that did pass away.
So when you arrived at that point, what was police presence? Since it was still going on, like, how were police sectioned around the building?
Sure. So you had, it seemed like police were blocking off roads within a 3 to 4 block radius of Mercy Hospital. So they were stationed right around 24th place in Michigan. Then as I tried to walk, because I knew media staging was at 26th in Michigan, I'm walking up the block. A police officer comes up. He's waving his hands profusely. Do not come this way. I said, I'm with media. Which way should I go? He says, I know it's long. Go all the way down the block and make a left. It's for your own safety. Of course. Thank you. You know,
yeah.
Hit the block. make a left. I go down that way. I bump into another woman who says, I hope you ain't going to Mercy Hospital. They crazy up there.
Oh, wow.
Something's going on right now. Mm-hmm. I was like, thank you, sister. Yes, I appreciate you. Yeah, I got you.
That's why I'm here.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So I'm tiptoeing toward the danger, but I'm mm-hmm. only still a block away from where it's happening. And all I could think about was the officers who run all the way into the danger. That's right. And that's what Samuel Jimenez did. The officer who was killed, 28 years old.
Four children,
was actually on another call doing something totally different. Got a call for backup and came mm-hmm. with his partner and then ran into the line of fire, ran into the action. And it's just harrowing. So here I am, just a report. I'm just telling the story. I'm still going to be outside, out of harm's way. And people leaving the hospital are worried about my safety. All I can think about was the officers.
That's right. Yeah. And at that point, did you know there had been an officer shooting?
Yes. I knew an officer had gotten shot. And I knew that the killer had gotten shot, and we had reports that he may have been dead. At that point, we didn't know for sure if he was mm-hmm. dead or not, and we didn't know if there were multiple shooters. Mm-hmm. And the amount of resources that go into one of these situations, because not only did they block off the perimeter in that area, then you had over at University of Chicago Hospital, where the officer was taken, where he was recovering, and I think other victims were taken mm-hmm. there as well. Heavy police presence there all around the area. And you get nervous because the longer it takes for them to release the officer's name, mm-hmm. when you report for a while and you don't get the victim's names pretty quickly once the story starts to take way, you know that family's being notified.
That's right.
And you kind of prepare mm-hmm. for the worst.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a break and continue this conversation here in just a bit. Amy Guth and Doma T. Pongo on WGN Nightside here on 720 WGN. Guth and Doma Team Pongo here tonight on WGN Nightside. We're with you till 1 o'clock, then we turn things over to our friend Brian Noonan. That is a good song.
Oh, it's a classic.
Anytime that one's in the producer booth, you know the music's gonna be good. It's true.
Kassara is special, man. She's a special talent, man.
I think last time we were on, we also did all the hits of the 90s.
Are we going with the 90s theme today, Cash? Is that what's happening?
I mean, we can do 90s. That's fine. Yeah.
Okay. I'm
cool
90s.
With that. We can do that.
Here's the thing. I trust your musical talent, and you could play absolutely anything, and I'm going to like it. It's going to be fine.
Thank you. That means a lot to me. Thank you so much.
And watch. You're going to play like my least favorite song in the world next.
Wait.
No.
I
trust you.
She did the craziest thing, though, earlier. She asked me the silliest question. She said, Doma T, what do you want to play after the first break? I'm like, Cash, when you're DJing, I don't have any requests. Like, I can't.
You're the DJ.
I can't request anything. Any song I'm going to give you isn't going to be as good as what you would have played.
That's right.
It's a fact.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. I will let everyone know that books me to refer back to this moment so that way they understand that I am a great vibe curator.
What is the most irritating part about being a DJ? I imagine you get random requests like all the time.
I think the most annoying part is the constant requests, especially when I tell them no requests. Mm-hmm. Like the moment that I say no requests and they keep asking me for a request, it's like, no, like, what did you not understand? I don't care what song you're asking for. It's just the fact that I don't want to play what you're asking me for to begin with.
And do you get asked for the same thing over and over again?
Yeah, all the time. Like if a new song drops, I'll get asked constantly. Like when Cardi B came out with Bodak Yellow, I got asked for that a lot. Or if someone, you know, makes a viral video with like a throwback song, people will constantly ask for that. And it's like, it's 10 o'clock and the party started at 9 o'clock. No one is here yet. Like, let's not play the song when there's more people here. I get that it's your favorite song.
Right.
I understand that. But it's everyone's favorite song right now.
But it's not what we're doing.
Give me like 2 more hours and then I'll play it.
Right.
Yeah. There's a sign. I feel like there's a psychology, like a sociological, psychological aspect to DJing. Like understanding human behavior, seeing what people move to, understanding the vibe of the party. Like,
that's interesting.
I really believe so.
Yeah, I
feel like there are a few professions that, aside from, you know, people who talk to people and pick their brains for a living, really give you access to how humans think. I think they're principals, teachers, DJs, comedians.
Hmm. All right.
See where I'm going?
Yeah.
See where I'm going with this?
I am.
I agree with that.
I'm on board with this.
I got my start with DJing by DJing poetry bouts, so I had to like play music that would match the vibe of a poem.
So you had to think fast.
I had to think very fast, but I also had to listen. I mean, I didn't have to, but that's just how I felt it made the performance better for everyone involved.
Right.
But I mean, you know, there'd be like someone come up, talk about the passing of their father, and then after them, it'd be someone like bashing their ex. And it's like a very quick switch, and I would just have to quickly change my mood with it. And it is very emotionally draining, but, you know, just to know that I can play a certain song that would just hype up the performance even more. Mm-hmm. It means a lot to me, and I take pride in that for sure.
I hear that.
Yeah.
Mom, we just had a nice little moment about you.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Thank you so much.
That was really profound. And we're both going, we have nothing to add to that. I'm just going to let that hang in the air for a minute. That's really beautiful.
Thank you.
There was a TED Talk conference, a conversation with Malcolm Gladwell. And they talked, that he debated this guy who was trying to talk about social empathy, where you're putting yourself in other people's shoes and really thinking about what they're and he was talking about how teachers, and that's why I got the teachers and principals thing from, what teachers and principals, because teachers have to deal with students, and not only have to deal with students, but their parents, and understand human behavior in a way that's even more remarkable than anyone else in society, but also principals, because they have to manage the teachers and all of that. And all I could think about was DJs and cash, because when you're at a party, it's not only just matching, or at a poetry set, it's not only matching the energy of the poem that was just said, but also you might want to shift the energy.
I was going to say, you have the power to kind of shift the vibe in the room a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay, but I want to add a profession. As you were talking about teachers, I'm going to say, I think that childcare providers probably have an interesting insight too. When you said dealing with the child and with the parent, I say that because once upon a time I nannied and I took care of this baby, and it was a fascinating insight into that family because they presented one way.
Wow.
And then I, you know what I mean? Like they
you saw who they really were.
Then I was like, that marriage is not going to last. Sure enough, it did not. Oh, they're probably listening going, wait a minute, that was our nanny.
Right. What tipped you off though? Like what did, you know, without
you know what? It was the way that they parented together was not very together at all.
Mm.
They really disagreed a lot and undermined each other a little bit.
Really?
You know, one would leave the room and it'd be like, nah, forget what she said, do this. And then other one would be in the room. They're like, no, do it this way. And I was like, oh, man. And in front of each other, they would say, do this. This is what the expectation of, you know, put him down for his nap at this time, blah, blah, blah. But then she would leave the room. He'd be like, just let him stay up so he'll sleep all night. And then, he'd leave and she'd come in the room. She'd be like, you know, we haven't been giving him any sugar, but if he seems kind of cranky, you could give him a little of this, you know, he loves this applesauce or whatever. Like they had rules they agreed on, and then they would kind of undermine each other.
Throw him out the window.
Yeah. And I was like, they're not going to work out. And sure enough, they didn't.
So when you're in a relationship, or not even just like a romantic relationship or work relationship, whatever, how do you know the telltale signs of this isn't going to work? Like, how do you know what those deal breakers are? Because sometimes they're subtle, right? Because if you get that situation, you got to watch that behavior over time, and you know that this is going to manifest into something else. But how do you know the difference between this is just a moment where mom and dad are kind of disagreeing, and something where it's like, yo, they're not going to work out? Like, I feel like in relationships, I've had really stupid deal breakers that turned out to be very good.
Well, here's my secret to that, is that I'm so obnoxiously picky that so few make the cut, right? So there's that. So I eliminate a lot of nonsense right off the bat. But I think when, in that particular case of that couple, it went so far beyond just kind of bickering, you know, because at first I was like, oh, they have a new baby, they're tired, they're bickering. But it was really more about a fundamental inability to communicate and willingness to undermine each other. Instead of just kind of like, this is what we're doing, we both know the schedule, we both know this. They clearly had very different ideas about parenting and philosophy and life and all the things. And then agreed on something that neither of them really believed in. And that made me say, I think they've agreed to a marriage that they don't really believe in.
That's deep.
Well, this is just philosophical nanny sitting on the couch with their baby. You know, right. I was like, they've bought into something. Like, their marriage is something they don't believe in. They just think that's what the other one wants. So I was sitting there every day. I would just sit there and like, that's what's going on right now.
That's heavy. I see that in I've seen something similar in relationships I've been in where, have you ever felt like people are together because they might look good on paper with one another?
Yeah.
And I feel like I was with someone before where I felt like I checked all the boxes, but clearly personality wise, we were not a match. I don't know. I put it on myself. I wasn't mature enough or something. Yeah, there was something like going on, but the job was there, whether, you know, whatever
our careers match up or whatever. Yeah.
Yes. All of those things match up. And we fool ourselves a lot of times.
That's totally right.
And we don't even, not just in relationships, there's a pattern that we do where you might be even in a workplace where the pay is good, but it takes you forever to roll out of bed and get ready and go to work.
Some part of you is saying, I hate this.
I hate this.
Yeah, that's
but
right.
We agree to things that we shouldn't even agree with because that's we feel obligated to some idea of what we should be
doing.
That's
right. You know what? That's funny. A long time ago, I went on a date with a guy that said to my face, like very early in the date, he was like, you know what? You really check every box. So he treated me like a contract, right? He was like, you really check every box. And I really think there could be some compatibility here. Meanwhile, I'm sitting across the table thinking, I don't feel connected to this person. Like, he's perfectly nice, but I don't think I'm ever going to go out with him again. I don't feel connected to him. He doesn't seem very emotionally open. I was talking about, you know, so much of the work that I do is very creative, and I was talking about creativity, and it was just flying over his head, you could tell. And I was like, this man doesn't give a damn
about anything. Nothing.
He does not even. He's just sitting there going, okay, she's doing this, she's doing that, she's tall,
she talks,
yeah,
she speaks well,
great.
Yes. Good.
I mean, he even said specifically, like, mentions my height. He was like, I love dark hair, and I really like, you know, you have high cheekbones. He was like making a mental list. And I was like, what are you doing? Like, are you trying to order up the right partner? Like, what are you doing?
Live mail order bride happening.
Yeah, right. And I was like, I don't think this is really gonna work out. Thanks, bye. I never went out with him again.
Oh my god. Well, you don't have to go out to get drinks tonight. We're gonna do some drinks tonight.
That's right.
Among work friends. In just a moment, we're going to hear from Krishan Lampley, who is going to talk about her company, Love Corkscrew. We can say that on the air, right?
We can say it.
Yes, we can.
I mean, back in the day when I originally interviewed her, it was impressed upon me by station management that I should make sure Corkscrew sounds like one word.
Wow. And what's funny is I didn't even realize the innuendo until you said it to Patty and Andrea earlier today. And I said, oh wow,
because again, it looks like a list.
Yes.
And that was like the position that management took at the time, but now, please, so much worse stuff than that is said on this air.
Anyway, also, we're gonna talk to her about it.
Also, it's a proper noun. That's the name of the company.
That's the name of it.
And at the time, it was kind of just starting. Now I see her wine everywhere.
Yeah,
everywhere. So she has had great success, and we're going to talk to her about all that here in just a bit. Amy Guth and Domati Pongo here on WGN Nightside, back in just a bit on 720 WGN. WGN.
Oh, I didn't know my mic was on.
I didn't want to talk over that song. It's so beautiful.
It's beautiful.
Playing all the hits tonight. All of them. Amy Guth and Domati Pongo here on WGN Nightside with you this evening. It's Wine 30 is what it is, Domati.
That's what it is. And it's been a long day.
Yeah.
Amy just got off a flight. I've been here since 11 a.m. We could use a glass of wine. This is a good way to wind down.
And oh, I see what you did.
You
there.
See what I did?
Down.
Wind down. Ha 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 ha. And so we invited Krishan Lampley from Love Corkscrew, which tell us first about your company, who you are. Thank you for coming this evening. Thank you for bringing all this wonderful wine.
Having me during wine season. This is the craziest time of year. They call it OND, wine season. So I am beyond happy to be here. So I own the company. I'm a négociant. That's the way to pronounce it, négociant, which is pretty much the maker of wine. So I produce my wine out of three different vineyards. I've been doing it for 5 years now, over 75,000 bottles sold and growing. And I am a unicorn in this industry, less than 1% as an African-American woman. So I literally account for 60 out of 111,000 in the world that do this. So I am definitely sitting in that unicorn space, but very happy to be here.
I love it. And what stores are you in? Because over the years, you have grown. I remember
Well, I want to start there.
Yes, let's start right from the beginning.
A handful of years ago, when I was doing overnights here, you were my guest, and we were talking about the future of this company. You were growing and all this stuff.
Literally just launched during that
time. That's right.
Yeah.
Fast forward, I'm in a Target, and I see your logo on a candle, and I'm like, wait, okay.
Like, what the heck happened? Yes, over 50 locations, but even more awesome, I hit the big box store. So since you had me on your show, Amy, I landed Mariano's.
Is since the word or is because the word?
Since I'm on your show.
Because
being on the show.
Tell us what we want to hear.
On the show.
There you go.
But big box stores like Mariano's, Target, Whole Foods, mm-hmm. Target being the latest one. So I've only been in Target for 6 months now. But the three, one of the three largest ones in the country, the one on Elston, has Love Corkscrew, as well as Larrabee and One South State Street. But it's been this whirlwind of amazingness, having the opportunity to be in stores like this and not be on the set. They call it a planogram. So I'm not technically in every Target, but I'm getting this awesome opportunity and test to grow and to make it in within these big box stores that I'm just in. It's been amazing. And now nationally, before when I was on your show, I was just serving Love Corkscrew within the Chicagoland area and selling it here, but now I can sell it nationally. So I'm definitely sending out wine club memberships and shipping
nicely
around the country.
Done.
That is awesome. Amy, you're also the reason that Krishan is here today, too, because it was at a networking event, a soiree of sorts.
And you can say that word all you want. It's not going to be as cool as the title that you
right,
said.
Right, Negocion.
Negocion.
I was trying to hang with you. I was trying to see if I could. I was trying to find a cool word with an accent on it.
I got
to
change careers, don't
I? Can't
because I want that beautiful title. Yeah. What do you do for a living? Well, of course I'm a
negociant.
I'm a negociant.
When people act like, yeah, we know
they're
what
like,
that
oh,
is.
Oh, of course. No. I know someone who's that. No, you don't.
No, you
totally
don't.
No, you
totally don't. But it sounds cool. Yeah.
I'm telling you. And she said I was on with Amy Guth at WGN a while back. And I said, I'm on with Amy Monday. Let's come on. And then as I'm digging up, I actually forgot about this. She was on the job interview series, the show on CNBC.
Yes.
And you were a candidate on that show. How did that come about? And what was that experience like being on a business show like that?
That was amazing. So it really came about with CNBC was searching for businesses to be on the show. And they were searching for businesses that were different, cool, that were looking for employees. And at the time, Love Corkscrew was looking for the next ambassador. So we actually flew out to New York, taped the show. We ended up being the premiere night, which is unbelievable. We were the second show on the premiere night, and the amazing things that happened with just being seen nationally was on a whole nother level. It was scary. Because, you know, you think, okay, you know, there's one thing to be on a reality show that's just silly or quirky, but to be on a business, CNBC, you know, it's my corporation, my company, my LLC, being on this show and being the entire episode was just this whole nother level. But it was so awesome because people always say, is reality really real? No, for real. Like, imagine being, you know, someplace for 12 hours and you not seeing not one camera. You're going to become yourself, you know, if you aren't already.
Right.
So I was 100% me. It gave Love Corkscrew this amazing exposure to everyone nationwide. And I loved every second of it.
That is wonderful. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, well, what was that experience? So you say you can't help but to become yourself.
Yeah.
At that. So at some point you walk in there and you're probably your guard is up, but I imagine it can't stay long because you're talking about, I mean, it's more than just your LLC. It's your life.
It's my baby.
It's your child.
It's my baby. So it was funny. So when I flew to New York, you know, it was one of these things where you just have whatever happens. Mm-hmm. My expectations were very much of, regardless, I'm always Krishan, no matter what setting I'm put in.
Right.
So when I got there, you know, the producers were like, okay, whatever you have, because of course they've seen our Skype and our interviews, and they're like, whatever you got, we love it. So we just need you
keep
to be
it.
Exactly who you are. I'm like, well, that's easy.
Right.
So I'm there with my publicist, and we literally have to go like off the plane, like, get
right
our makeup
there.
Done and boom, we're on set. And again, for real, like you're in this room at the time, it was called the job interview. So obviously you're in this like office space with like 200 cameras. but you don't see one of them. So, you know, for us to interview people that are going to work for my company for real, yeah, I'm going to be being myself. If I'm going to hire this person, mm-hmm. of course I'm going to be me. So again, it was unreal. And 12 hours later, it's like, okay, yeah, no, for real. I don't like you. I like you.
Yes, no, mm-mm, no way.
No, this is my baby. This is what I've worked hard for. So I need you to represent Love Corkscrew in the best light. And it was an amazing experience. And that person is still working for me to this day. So
excellent.
Reality show sometimes is real.
I always wondered that. I wondered. Well, I know still work that. For me, yeah. At the end of these series, you never know what happens to the businesses. Right. Was that real? What was real? What was fake? How easy was it to forget that the cameras were there?
Very easy. I kid you not, in a matter of minutes, I didn't even pay attention to the cameras.
Really?
Because also, as a small business, I have to say to myself, okay, what do I want people to see me around the country, possibly the world? Funny, I kid you not, the world. There was somebody who, a pastor who actually emailed me that he was on an international flight coming back from, I believe, Europe, and saw my episode on the plane.
Nice.
Like, so, you know, so you say to yourself, you know what, if I'm going to have these people see me for the first time and possibly the only time, I'm going to make sure I'm exactly who I am and what makes this company special. And again, it wasn't hard. I just had to represent Love Corkscrew, and I hope I did.
But is it hard when you're a star, when you just have
it? Man, cut it
out. And a good product. Speaking of the product, let's get to the product.
Yes,
what's up?
Wine.
Yes.
Wine.
So we were talking about the wine, talking to Krishan Lampley of Love Corkscrew. Right now, you poured us up something in between the break.
I did. I poured you guys my Riesling, my semi-sweet Riesling, because I always say that's the easiest one to pour for certain varietals. If somebody likes dry or sweet, that sits right in the middle. It's my semi-sweet wine. So that's what I poured. But when I kid you not by saying it's wine season, like, this is the time of year that is extremely demanding in the wine spirit industry, whether it be events, whether it be tastings, whether it be private affairs, galas, people want wine now. So my schedule is stupid. So yeah, you guys are tasting my Riesling, but I have five varietals. Mm-hmm. I have a dry called We're Moving Up. Yes, that's from the Jeffersons.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's say that too. The names of all your wines are so charming and fun.
Thank you. It's so simple. I'm going to tell you the secret.
Tell me.
The number one reason why people buy wine is the label. Number two, the price. Number three, the taste. If you hit them with one and two, and this is not Love Corkscrew, one and two, and the third is the taste is not that great, people are still going to go back and purchase that product because it's recognizable. It's something easy. Because wine and spirits are very intimidating. Right? You see all these crazy names and scrolling, and people look at the back of the bottle and act like they know what they're looking at. You don't know what you're looking at when you're looking at. What are you looking at? Alcohol content. What are you looking at? So people feel that, you know, I'm intimidated. I'm scared about wine. So I said to myself, I got it. Instead of people having to ask for a Chenin Blanc or Bordeaux or Chianti, just ask for the phrase. It's simple. It's nothing you have to really think hard on. You're not going to forget We're Moving On Up. Head over heels, touch the sky. That's easy. Just know you like it.
Which one is the Riesling?
The Riesling is Head Over Heels.
Head Over Heels.
Yeah, very sexy, very romantic. We're Moving On Up is my Cabernet Sauvignon.
Love it.
Hard Knock Life is my Concord. The Touch the Sky is my Niagara. And Good Times, Good Friends is the Pinot Grigio.
So when you come up with the names, how do you... Now, I know the strategy of why you come up with the names.
Yes.
How do you think of them? This got me head over heels.
Right.
Like, what is it?
Exactly what you just did. Exactly what you just did right there. So, a Riesling is known to be very romantic. And it's known for people to drink it. That, you know, you have a couple, they want to enjoy some wine for the evening. It's romantic. So thus, Head Over Heels is my number one seller during Valentine's Day. We're Moving On Up.
Riesling?
Yeah. My Cabernet Sauvignon, We're Moving On Up, is really known for like promotions and real estate agents buy it nonstop when their clients are moving into a different home and setting. So everything was very strategic, but at the same time, just fun. Touch the Sky because it's yellow. It's like the sun. No, I didn't do it from Kanye West. No, it was literally from it being like sunny and fun. Hard Knock Life, people think it's Jay-Z. Actually, I wanted to be Annie growing up because I played the piano. I was classically trained, had perfect pitch, and I always wanted to be Annie because I grew up with red hair. And that was it. That was Hard Knock Life. So I'm okay with people having whatever feeling and taking the brand and taking the names for whatever they think it makes sense for them. I love it. If you like it, I love it.
You just came out with a new flavor, new brand, new name.
I'm so excited. Yes, yes.
What is it?
Oh my gosh. So everybody always talks about rosé all day, rosé all day. So I said, okay, I need to tap into this. And every time I pick a varietal, again, being a négociant, it takes time to really develop exactly what your varietal is going to be because it's to my specifications. I'm like the chemist, if you will. So I want it to be just right. So I said, okay, if I'm going to do a rosé, it has to be just right. But everybody keeps saying this is in. And I went to Harvest this year and all these vineyards and sommeliers are telling me, rosé, rosé. I'm like, okay, fine, I'll do it. So I finally found the exact rosé, developed the exact rosé I wanted. And I said, all right. I was talking to a friend and she was like, okay, what about We Go High? You know, when they go low, we go high, right? We all know what that's from, right? Mm-hmm. I'm like, I said, We Go High. That's it. That's it.
That was it.
Seriously, that was it. It was a conversation via text with a friend. I came up she came up with We Go High, and I said, that's what I'm going to do. And thus, Rosé, We Go High is coming out hopefully December 1st, but possibly sooner with Love Corkscrew. And it's getting crazy buzz already. Crazy buzz. So it's absolutely delicious, and I can't wait to launch it.
When we come back, we'll talk about what wine pairs well with what foods, Amy. What you think?
That's right. Yeah, we're doing that.
It's Amy Guth, Doma T. Pongo, WGN Nightside. Like, this really goes well with the reason right here. It's a good head over heels right here. It's Amy Guth with Doma T. Pongo. We're talking to Krishan Lampley of Love Corkscrew right now. We're sipping a Riesling.
I mean, anytime a guest walks into the radio studio with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 bottles of wine and beautiful wine glasses and immediately starts pouring, it's going to be good.
It's going to be good.
I'm here for that. This is what's happening.
Or terrible. Either way, we have a great time.
I'm telling you, when you got wine, everything's fine.
So we're having the Riesling. I always feel a little guilty tasting something on the air, you know, because I'm like, people are listening and they could use a glass of wine.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure.
And they're like, those jerks are having wine.
True.
They're a little thirsty. They're like, I don't want to put on pants and go to the store right now. Those jerks are having wine. Now I want wine.
They're living vicariously through
us. Awesome. Bet you they buy a glass tomorrow. I mean, they buy a bottle tomorrow, so they'll be fine.
So when you have a Riesling, what does it pair well with? And what do wine connoisseurs even mean when they say that?
Okay, so this is how I break it down. And everybody's going to have a different answer. Every sommelier, every wine enthusiast, négociant, we all have different answers. But this is how I look at it. Wine that's produced by Love Corkscrew, I only do straight varietals, number one. All right, I don't do blends. That's what I like. I also liked only with a cork. I don't like twist tops. But I want you to enjoy Love Corkscrew by itself. You do not have to pair it. But when you do pair, think of it as, I always say to people that like to cook, certain spices that you put on certain foods, right? That is exactly how you would pair wine with certain foods. A perfect example that I always use. If you go to your favorite steakhouse in the world, your most favorite steakhouse, you have this delicious filet mignon or T-bone, whatever it is. I like my steak walking, right? So medium rare. And I take a cup of sugar and put it on the steak and eat it. Does that sound good?
Not at all.
So why would you drink a sweet wine with a steak? But think of the ways that you marinate steak. Balsamic vinegar, you soak it in certain things that tend to be more oaky or wood. Right. So what would pair well with a good steak? Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot. So things like that. The Riesling. My particular Riesling is a semi-sweet, so you have a little more grapefruit, a little bit of lemon zest. Okay, great salad. Think about the salads that have like mangoes and things, the fun little summer salads. It's as simple as pairing it with food. Think of it as an ingredient.
Mm-hmm.
Simple.
Yeah. That's awesome. Sure. I love that. Someone texted in. 773 says, Amy, we're also watching you have fun. So that makes them happy.
Oh, I love it.
We got another one. Have your glass. I'm having a bowl. So that...
Get it. Happy Monday.
So we're good on a Monday night.
That's awesome.
So what goes well with the turkey then?
Turkey, yes. I just got actually several people that asked me today. I think what's fun with turkey Or my Concord and Niagara. So your slightly sweeter ones. Now, when I say sweeter, I don't mean dessert. I don't mean port. I mean just a slight sweet hint to it. For instance, my Hard Knock Life is a Concord. Yes, you use that to make what? Jam. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. So think about it. What people usually eat with turkey, cranberry sauce.
Ah.
So think about things that maybe have just a slight sweet hue to it. Or spicy. Sweeter wines are great with spicy. If you do the non-traditional Thanksgiving, I definitely say more of the hearty ones. More of my Pinot Grigio is really fun. If you do a lighter, especially if you're a vegan, you do more vegetables and eggplants and things like that. I think a Pinot Grigio pairs very well. But have fun with it. It doesn't matter. Whatever you like. But just be smart about it. Don't drink something that conflicts with what you're eating. It should always complement what you're eating. And just keep it very, very easy. Don't overthink it. Enjoy it. Drink it is what I said.
I mean, my Thanksgiving is going to be so untraditional that I think I'll just buy a couple of those bottles and sit there and drink them.
Love it.
Not gonna order.
Just, that's it.
My family lives far away and that's fine. And it's, oh no, that's by design.
Oh, I get it.
It's all good. Oh no, we're good.
Like a lot of people say they have lasagna. So I'm like, oh my God, my Cabernet Sauvignon. But it's not just about Love Corkscrew wines. Again, it's about literally when you look at the back of the bottle, know what you're looking for. You actually should be looking for the different things that says that what it says it has in it or the top note. It always tells the story, not the alcohol content.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we know red wines are always going to have a higher alcohol content. What you really need to look at is what it's telling you it pairs with or what it has in it that makes sense, and that always works. It always works. Just really read it. Really read the back of the bottle.
WD and Nightside. We'll be back in just a moment. I was drinking some wine. I didn't want people to hear me slurp it. We'll be back in a moment. It's Amy Guth. It's Double T Pogo. WGN.
All seven and we'll watch them fall. It's standing in the way of love, and we will smoke them all with an intellect and a savoir faire. Universe will ever compare. I am yours now and you are mine, and together we'll love through all space and time. So don't cry, one day all seven will die.
There it is.
Got real 90s on us, Cash.
Good song. Amy Guth and Domati Bongo here on the WGN Nightside this evening. We've got Christian Landley with us. That means there's wine in the studio. We're drinking. We're talking about wine. We've tried. You're on your third. I'm on my second.
Yeah, I'm on my third. So if it goes, it's all down here from here, people.
I love it.
New York Times has this article I wanted to share with you guys, especially with somebody like Krishan in studio, about five common wine myths, and they debunk them. And I want to see which one of these you guys agree with.
All right.
Or disagree with. So one of them, we talked about this a little bit. Here's myth number one, sweet wines with savory dishes. Many consumers assume that wines served with savory foods must be dry. They often associate sweetness with cheap jug wines, fortified wines, or German wines.
Don't hate on the stuff in my fridge.
That is a complete myth. That is wrong.
Okay.
So savory and spicy actually go great with sweet. I always think about like jerk chickens and things that are super, super spicy. Sweet cuts it so perfectly. Again, when I say sweet, we're not talking about ports and dessert wines. That is completely different.
Right, right.
That's where it gets all gray, right? People automatically think sweet. Oh, okay, so I can drink Moscato with my savory meal. No, that's a dessert wine. No. But something with that slight sweetness, I would say 1.25 or a little bit more of residual sugar, is going to be really great with spicy. It's going to cut it nice.
That's exactly what they said. They said the residual sugar in the wine, often caused by incomplete fermentation, must be countered by lively acidity.
See? I think that balance is key. Like, the idea of having like a dessert wine and a sweet bite of something sounds horrible. That sounds like overload to me.
Yes.
So, you know, I always like to cut spicy food with a sweeter, lighter kind of wine. I love to balance.
And food. Salty. Yeah. Think about one of my favorites is a chocolate-covered pretzel. Think about how that has that slight saltiness, right? But you're cutting it with something that's not overtly sugary. Mm-hmm. You're cutting it with like a dark chocolate. which is not ridiculously sweet. It's just nice and simple. So, yes, that's definitely a myth. That's wrong. Sweet and spicy works great.
Or when I go to a steakhouse and they automatically pair me with these really, really dry reds and my mouth is just, I need something to, so usually if I end up in that situation, I have a Pinot Noir, I've got a steak, and I've got a glass of water because it's just too much going on. But so what would
it's
be
about
a good,
light.
Yeah. So what would be a good way to, if I'm eating a great steak, mm-hmm. and I want to pair it with a great wine, but I don't want something that's too dry.
Gotcha. Okay. So, yes. I like my steak walking, right? But I like a good Chianti Bordeaux. I like it to be dry. I like it to be like, I want to cut my wine with a knife. But for people that do not like it that dry, just think, again, it's the spice. It's the flavor that you like. So, keep it light. A Pinot Noir is great. A Syrah is great. Just keep it very light and airy and slight berryness to it. And you'll be happy. But also a myth that you always have to drink red when you eat a steak. Not necessarily true. There's some great Chenin Blancs. There's some great Sauvignon Blancs that are very light and easy. Do we want you to do something peppery, which usually equates with red? Yes. But enjoy what you enjoy. But buttery works very well. A Chard would be just fine. A oaky Chard.
Mm, here goes another one. Okay. Serving temperatures. Says, sadly, an article of faith that many restaurants and homes, for that matter, will serve white wines too cold.
Yes.
And red wines too warm.
Yes. Huge myth. Okay. So if you think about back in the day, room temperature was different than it is now. All right. So usually it was actually a little colder than really it is now. So red wines, actually, if they're too warm, you're not truly getting the true essence of it. You actually need to chill them slightly. You freeze a white. Okay, so think about this. Think about frostbite. Think about when you freeze something in your freezer and it has a freezer burn, right? Mm-hmm. That's what you're doing to your white when you stick it in the refrigerator too long. You're not truly tasting the essence of the wine or the varietal.
It just tastes like cold.
Yeah, it's just cold. It's just cold. It feels good. So let me tell you this. If you want to overchill a wine, do that with some cheap wine that's really bad. Because it's going to taste better. Right? Because you're really not tasting the true essence of the varietal. But it needs to be slightly room temperature. So my advice I always give for chilling a white is just literally put it in your sink in a little bit of ice for like 10 minutes max. Stick it in there right before you serve your guests. Pull it out and it's going to be the perfect temperature. For your reds, put it in the refrigerator for about 10 minutes. Just give it a little bit of chill. Pull it out. It's going to be absolutely delicious. You do not need to serve your reds hot. That doesn't even make any sense. Ew. No.
And yet so many stores have that display of like the fridge case.
Right.
Where you can buy your white wine for $2 more. It's already chilled.
Like, come on.
And it's been sitting in that fridge for days.
Fine if you like you stick in your car and your car is kind of warm and you bring it home. Okay, great. Maybe by the time you serve it. But that's silly. No, it's not necessary. I enjoy actually a lot of my wines just slightly chilled.
What is it about red and white wines though white wines taste better chilled and red wines seem to taste better warm? Is it part of the process and how they're made, or what is it?
Sugar content, sure, is going to be a lot of it. But this is the thing that I always tell people with the chilled wines, and a lot of hotels hate me for saying this, right? But a lot of times they have a lot of cheap wines that are overly tanned. So let me give you an example of what that means. Let's say you have a teacup. You stick a tea bag in there and you leave it in there and you go talk on the phone or you go talk to your friends or whatever. You come back and you add a little sugar or honey or however you like your tea. You drink it. It's going to have bitterness, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to have that weird like, mm-hmm. And what are you going to do? You're most likely going to add what? More sugar.
Some sugar to it, yeah.
Okay, and when you taste that, sure, the sugar hits you at first, but then when it calms down, you're still going to have overly tannin tea. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Those are tannins. So what do we do in Europe to cut those tannins? You add what to tea? Milk.
Mm.
Right? Mm-hmm. So they add milk to tea. So that's the same thing as adding what? As drinking a really bad overly tannin wine and eating cheese. It's going to make it taste better. So chilled with some cheese, the wine all of a sudden is okay. So you're actually killing the tannins and that flavor by adding the milk, adding that. And you're also killing it by being so chilled. You're not really tasting the true taste of the varietal.
That is a perfect segue into the next one. It says wine with cheese. The final fusty belief, this isn't the final one because I'm going out of order, is that cheese goes best with red wine. Does anyone still follow this? And the writer goes on to say, it seems to me that many people now understand that white wine usually is a better match with cheese. What Correct. Say you?
Same thing. So it goes to what I said. Usually white wines tend to be overly tan. And so, yes, they're going to go with cheese a little better. It's just acidity that it's cutting. I think red wines are great by themselves. You don't have to, you know, drink a sip and then follow it with a bite. That just doesn't even make sense to me. No, then what are you doing it for, right? It's like taking a pill and following it with water. Like, it's not necessary. I think a varietal should be enjoyed exactly for what it is. You do not have to cut it with anything. But can you enjoy it with something a little bit more? Sure. And that's all about what food you have and what the flavor is. It's like a recipe.
I love that you're such a purist. You're like, I don't do blends. I do the pure varietal.
Yes.
The wine should stand on its own. I don't need to cut it with a food or a thing.
No.
You can, but you don't have to.
You don't have to.
I like that about you, that you're like, I'm just going to let this wine stand.
Yeah. And that's what I like. Now, again, everybody has what they like. There's some great blends out. Prisoner, I think, is one of the best blends that are out right now. But I don't particularly like that. Just like twist tops, I just don't particularly do it. There's nothing wrong with it. I just don't do it. But a lot of people ask, what is a straight varietal? What that means, it's 74% or more of that particular grape. And that makes it a straight varietal. And that's what I like. That's what I do. That's what Love Corkscrew's about. And regardless of, you know, if it's California, if it's Illinois, if it's Michigan, whatever. There's wine snobs out there. That's great and all. So am I. But at the end of the day, I want to make sure my wine is good. It's hitting exactly where I need it to for people that aren't. So I don't want people to be intimidated by wine, and that's what Love Corkscrew is about. Let's have fun.
And that's there's it. So much of that, and that's what's so great about your line, is that there's so much kind of big talk, and people you know, grab a couple of words and they're like, nose, sure, I've heard that, I'm going to say that,
or, right, just, you know, because it's 96 points. Do you really know what the 96 points means?
Right,
like,
right.
Stop. Like, just enjoy it. Yeah. Just enjoy. That's all I want.
And so it's great that your approach is so about, I mean, personally, I love anything that is about bringing down pretension,
yes.
which I think you do so wonderfully.
Thank you.
And really make something very accessible to a lot of people, which is really great.
All I want to do. It's not that serious. So, just enjoy it.
So the rosé is out, or it's about to be.
It will be out. Yes, my rosé will be out.
I predict perhaps the person it is named for might discover it.
Let's hope.
I predict that.
Yes.
And then after that, what is next for your
You know,
company?
It's funny. You know, a lot of people say, what's next? And I, at 5 years in this business, I've been in 20 years in the business, 5 years with Love Corkscrew. I cannot say what's next because, you know, if you asked me 3 years ago, 4 years ago, I would have said it's about Love Corkscrew going national. But it's amazing that I get so many speaking engagements, so many things about just being a woman in this industry, that I don't look like this industry. Just so much traveling that I do in that aspect. I think Love Corkscrew is here. It's bigger than wine. It's bigger than Krishan Lampley. It's about saying to people, look, you can do it. Trust me, I'm a unicorn in this industry. If anybody can do it, I've lost everything and I came back in the industry booming. You can do it. And I think actually for Love Corkscrew, it's just bringing awareness to small businesses. It's bringing awareness to being an African-American woman, being a woman in this industry and saying, you know what? Hey, I'm going to keep moving. I'm going to keep doing it no matter what. And I think that's what Love Corkscrew is about.
Where can I find my mic is on and off. Where can they follow you and find you on social media, online, all that good stuff?
So simple. It's literally just Love Corkscrew. No dots, no commas, nothing in between. Just Love Corkscrew on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, everywhere. Just Love Corkscrew. LoveCorkscrew.com for the website. And just follow my journey. And know, I want everybody to know out there, just go on and do it. Life is too short.
Thank you for coming. Thank you for getting us.
Thanks for having me.
Getting us buzzed. And
thanks for wine in the middle.
Hi. And I'm going to leave you guys with this wine.
Oh.
I hope you guys give it away and
don't
drink it.
Remember that time we got super drunk in the green room?
Seriously. And they laughed really loud with that.
Yes.
And passed out on the floor and got fired.
And
so
got
it
fired.
Would be because of Love Corkscrew, and that would be an honor. So I'm leaving it here for the station. I want you guys to enjoy Love
Lovely.
Corkscrew.
So yes. good to
Happy
see you
holidays.
Again.
Good to see you, Amy.
All right. We're going to take a little break. Amy Guth and Doa Tipongo here on WGN Nightside, back in just a bit.
Yeah. You know what? I like the players. No diggity, no doubt. Play on, play it. Play on, play it. Yo, Dre dropped the verse.
Going down, fade to Black Street. The homies got at me, collab creations. Bump like agony, no doubt. I put it down, never slouch. As long as my credit can vouch, a dog couldn't catch me.
720 WGN. Tammy Guth and Dova T Pongo. We're just dancing. We're having a dance party now. We had a little bit of wine.
Yeah, now we're dancing.
Now we're like, no diggity's on. Let's dance.
Forgot we're doing a radio show.
We're like, why is the music playing? Oh, because we're back. Right.
It's so funny. Krishan said she didn't like this song at first, but then, you know, grew to love it. I could see how she could not like it. Was there a song? What is your favorite song that you hated for a while and a then it question. Became one of your favorite songs?
I don't know. There's so many that just get stuck in my head that I don't even know if I like them or not.
Yeah, and you just hear them like when you're shopping, and they get. There's one song, I don't know if Cashera has, she probably doesn't have it queued up, but.
She literally has every song all the time.
That is very true. Latch, or what is it? Sam Smith and Disclosure?
Wow, way to pull that out.
Yeah. That song, every time I hear that song, I think about.
Look at how fast she is!
There it is, quick. Every time I hear this, I want to ask, do you have these in a 34? Like, just instantly. This song right here gets stuck in my head, but I love it. I love it now. You left my heart up. You remember this one, Amy?
Yeah. So, it's one of those songs that, like, I always give up on too fast.
What you mean?
Because it's beautiful once it gets going. Like, once he's singing, it's pretty.
Yes,
and it's like
yes.
This very dreamy, pretty.
Right, but in the beginning, it was real glow sticky.
Glow sticky.
It's a little glow sticky.
I'm saying that forever now. I love glow sticky because everybody knows exactly what that means. It means ladies with little pigtail buns,
yes,
and candy necklaces,
yes,
and the super baggy pants with the little tank top,
the big shoes.
Yeah.
Those are all in right
super
now.
Super platform.
I just picture a Spice Girl right now.
It's that, yeah.
Yes.
I mean, that's so funny because I feel like, you know, I walk around and looking at the, like, young, I'm going to sound like a grandma right now, but it's like all the, you know, like all the young ladies walking around. I'm like, I wore that in 1992. And I'm like, you bought that at the Forever 21.
When the fanny pack came back, is that how you felt?
No, because at no point was I aligned with the fanny pack. But I was very aligned with the Doc Martens and the chokers.
Really?
And the yeah, very aligned with the Riot Girl situation.
I can still see you rocking some Doc Martens.
I'm literally wearing them right now. Look
that
at
is.
I am wearing Doc Martens this second.
That is
and
hilarious. I can't do. Oh wow!
I'm bringing it.
I can't do the fanny packs. Like so, like fellas are rocking fanny packs though. Crossbody, like over the shoulder
with, like,
and under
real
the armpit.
Fancy ones. There's some.
Yeah, like Gucci fanny packs. Like
yeah.
I mean these are gangsters. Like, you know, from the South Side. I'm hanging with like. It's a fanny pack. What are you
it's
doing,
a fanny
bro?
Fanny pack.
Yeah, you're like, no, I got my, you know, my gun in here. Like, you know, it's like, how can you make a fanny pack tough? I don't know,
and,
man.
And people will try to call it a bunch of different things to avoid saying fanny pack.
Right, right.
They'll be like, it's a utility bag. That's not a utility bag.
No, Batman had one. I got one too. Right. Like, yeah, nah, bro, that's a fanny pack.
Yeah, but
pack.
Also, like, every suburban dad at Six Flags has one too. So don't be tough about it. It is literally just a fanny pack.
That's funny. Oh, thanks to 608. Finally, text back and said, finally great music at WGN.
Yes.
If this was a music station, I would be offended, but we only play music for about 8 seconds between segments. So they could have that. It's okay. Thank you.
I just want to say thank you to that texter. Thank you very much. I do what I can. Thank you.
How did you do that? I'm not even going to ask. That's what Cashera does, man.
How does she what? Find that song so fast?
So fast. So fast. It was right there. She pulled the trigger quick on that record, man. That is one of my favorite. Another song that I hated, but grew to love, Homecoming by Adele. I'm a hip hop head, so yeah. All the music I love hip hop, yeah. I love R&B. If I go outside of like hip hop, it's usually a really obscure song, and I hate it for about 10 seconds, and I'm like, okay, right. I don't want to admit I like this, okay. But I love it. Yeah, that was Sam Smith and Adele for me.
All right,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, I can. Yeah.
You can dig it.
I can imagine that.
Okay, no judgment.
I don't know that there's that many songs that I'm like, ugh, and that I later came around to.
Yeah.
I pretty much dig my heels in and I'm like, this is crap, and I stay there.
What type of music do you like? What's your
I love hip hop. I love gosh, I like everything. I mean, I love the Smiths and the Cure and that genre too.
I don't know who those people are.
What?
Yes, no. No idea.
You know the Smiths.
I know a family.
How Soon Is Now? You know that song.
How soon? It's 12:28. What does that mean? How soon is now?
it's a song. I don't know.
That's you're asking about the time.
It may be just that I'm old and I know that song.
No, I'm just really in my enclave. Like,
Cash, help me.
Let's see. No
not
idea.
Ringing a bell?
Not at all.
This is the anthem of my entire 20s. And you're like, no.
I love it.
Thank you, darling. Thank you. We were there in the mosh pits together, darling.
That's right. Leg warmers.
Yes.
Don't see, I'm with you. I don't know this song.
What?
I'm lost. I have clothes older than Cash.
Andre, you said you got what?
She said I have clothes
older than DJ Cash.
Sam,
it's true. I'll take I'm that. Not even kidding.
I'll take that.
You guys won the mosh pits. That was the record. That was the one. Awesome. I love it though.
That
I
was
like
the
though.
Anthem of my 20s. Yeah. That's
you like it? I love it.
I actually like it. You like it, Cash?
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
I can get with that.
It wasn't bad. I'm going to need a little more from that. Oh, okay. It didn't completely suck. It's fine.
You know, I'm just staying here. I'm just throwing my mic off. Bye, y'all.
That's right. So, I mean, I mean, when people ask me, like, what kind of music do you like? I like a little bit of everything. Not so much on banjos, right? Like, if it's got banjos, I'm probably out.
Probably not in it.
But I tend to, yeah, like, all the 80s, 90s, New Wave, Smiths, Cure, Bauhaus. I was a goth high school. Like, in high school, I was totally goth.
Word.
I was completely goth. I lived in Texas, and I was like...
I'm surprised, but not surprised.
Right.
Yes. I see it now.
Right. Once I say it, people are like, oh you totally word. Were that lady from The Craft. Right. Yes. I ran around with, like, my spiked... little wrist bracelety things and my little dog collar. I was totally goth. My little purple lipstick and all the eye makeup in the world.
That's dope, man. Classic Amy.
And then Nirvana. Run, Chapin.
Now this one.
This one, you know.
This is my record.
And, like, this song was an interesting moment because we had, for rock and roll wise, we had, like, all those... I call that genre something I actually can't say on the air, but it's like a very hyper masculine glam rock kind of genre. Like, we had a lot of Guns N' Roses, like we had like all this stuff, and then grunge happened, and it was a moment everybody realized that there was a pivot.
I love that record.
Yeah, it was a good one. We're way late to break. Darlis is going to kill us.
Oh, my God. I'm loving this music, though. I know, I'm right? So forgiving of you guys.
We're having a little 90s moment here. Thank you for being here, because otherwise I'd be
bet.
Like, well, back in my day, there was Nirvana. And we liked it and wore our flannel. So I appreciate having peer coverage
always.
Here, Darlis.
I got
good.
Your back, Guth, always.
Thank you. All right, Amy Guth, Doma T. Pongo here on WGN Nightside. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN.
I've never seen Amy Guth dance so much in my life.
I love this song so much. I know, right? And I always forget cameras are on us, and I'm in here like doing the slide.
Amy can dance, man.
Only takes half a glass of wine, and I'm like, hey, we're dancing in here. That's what we're doing.
That's what we're doing, man. Oh, my God. It's Amy Guth, Doma T. Pongo on WGN Nightside. I don't know if you saw this story. So people get really into sporting events, especially parents, especially if you're... There's that
it's
dad
bizarre.
Who's screaming on the sidelines, cursing out the coaches. There's this dad that took it to a whole nother level. He's a parent of a student who plays football at Nazareth High School. They were in a game against Simeon High School, or Simeon if you're from the area. That's how you pronounce it, but I think it's really pronounced Simeon. And they were playing against Nazareth, and this guy, he's a dad of one of the students, but he's also a referee in the league. He's accused of wearing his referee uniform, standing on the sidelines, and convincing the referees to call the plays his way.
That is unethical behavior, is what that is.
Absolutely. And I am not a sports guy. I do not profess or pretend to be one. So I called my weekend buddy, Joe Brand.
That's right.
And asked if he would come on and break down the story for us. And he's on the air right now. Joe Brand, what's up, man?
Hang on. Hang on. Technical difficulties. Sounds, hey, there we go. Like, hi, Joe.
Sorry for the delay. We've been drinking.
No, yeah, I was going to say, I hope I'm not too much of a buzzkill. It's not like you have a bunch of time over there.
I mean, a little bit.
A little, but it's all right. It's all right. But no, Joe, what happened, man? What happened with this guy?
The crazy thing is, I was at the game 2 weeks ago. I actually left our shift on Saturday to go cover this for another company. And, apparently he's in his black and white jumpsuit, his referee outfit that he has for his other job or his main job, whatever it is. And apparently Simeon's claim is that he was influencing the refs on the game to make calls that would benefit Nazareth. And, I mean, there were a handful of controversial calls, the majority of them not going Simeon's way. The thing is, though, I mean, they happened in real time. It's not like the play happened and then the team of refs huddled over to the sideline and talked to this ref and then came back and made the call. So that's where, I mean, it gets very interesting. This whole thing just gets so interesting. Again, there were the majority of the calls not going in Simeon's favor. But what is this guy doing there? And why is he talking to the refs? And the referees doing the game have to be held somewhat accountable just by the fact of they have to know that someone can't just be dressed as a referee on the sidelines.
Right.
That just shouldn't be allowed.
And the thing is, like, on his social media, it seems like he doesn't necessarily get that because he's really, like, he's saying, I did what was needed to make sure Naz won, and then I didn't make one bad call. Well, that's not the point. The point is you were on the field dressed as a referee when you were not supposed to. And imagine you are the referee for that game, and suddenly this dude runs out there. You're like, wait, hold on. What's happening right now? And it seems like he's not catching on to the real problem of it.
That's what continues to make this story so bizarre, is that this guy totally isn't in hiding. He apparently just goes straight onto Facebook and not only admits to doing it, but just tries to justify what he had done. I just don't get where you get the background thinking that that's the right thing to do in that situation. And the one thing I'm a little bit unsure of, I don't know how much clarification we've gotten because there's been a misspelling of his name in a couple of stories, and the way that it had been commented on is apparently supposed to be the correct way to spell the guy's name, but it had been spelled differently in a couple other stories. So I don't want to say that this is just somebody coming out of nowhere and writing this on Facebook, because I haven't seen anything like that. But, you know, you never know with these kind of things. It's honestly, this thing keeps getting crazier and crazier. I'm not claiming that it was not him. But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. But there is a chance, you believe, that, you know, maybe there's some internet trolls out there putting some information out there because they have similar names. You're just not sure.
Just because it's possible. And the other thing is, I still have yet to find it. I've seen screenshots of it, but I haven't found the official comment yet.
See, it's funny. We're talking about this in the newsroom. I was talking to Steve Bertrand about this because remember that situation when that ball, that fly ball was out in the crowd and a grown man snatched the ball away from a kid at a baseball game and he was evil and everyone said every bad name in the book about him. But come to find out later on, there was this footage that captured him taking the ball away from this kid who it was headed his way. Later on, you find out that another foul ball went that way, and he gave it to the kid. And this time, he took this ball, and then I think he ended up giving that one to the kid or something as well. So I say all that to say sometimes things aren't what they seem when stories first come out. But when I first saw this story, I was heated, man. I was heated. And because now Nazareth has gone on to win not only this game against Simeon, but the following game, and they're headed to the championships on Saturday?
Correct, yeah.
So what happens with the lawsuit? So now Simeon's parents and their attorney, Shay Allen, is suing the IHSA what is supposed to happen and what can happen, because these types of things usually don't go their way when these lawsuits are filed. And it's not like they can replay the game. Maybe they could. I don't know. Joe, what happens? What do they do?
Well, it's funny because you let off with saying you don't know about sports. You call me, and I really don't know much about law, so I was going to call you. But, but there was a very informative article from the Chicago Tribune from Elvia Maligan, and she mentioned how a professor of sports law at Marquette stated that an outcome of a game has never been changed by a judge because courts don't want to interfere with athletic organizations. I mean, that makes a lot of sense because it's the whole thing about sports is, one, it's leisure. Two, it's a combination of chance, athleticism, and just what happens in real time. It's not a court debate. You can't bring two teams to the court and say which team should be better, therefore that team wins. And the whole argument is, if this ref wasn't on the sidelines influencing the refs, that Simeon should not have lost the game. You can't really 100% prove that. But the other thing is, Simeon isn't even really asking to be named the winners of that game. They want no winner to be named. And I forget what the second part of it was, but they want no winner to be named. Oh, they want no winner to be named, and they want the officials to be held accountable, basically losing their jobs. All involved, the ones in the field and the one on the sideline.
I think I kind of like the second half of that, though, because I think what do you think, Amy?
I don't know about the ones who are supposed to be on the field, because I can imagine being in that setting and going, wait, what in the hell is going on right now? And just being kind of overwhelmed with, like, who is this guy? What's happening? I think there should be consequences for him. Like, he made a choice to be unethical.
Right.
That he was like, my actions are like, I'm willing to do this so that this game can be won. And I'm going to stretch the truth or push this and try to influence. So I don't know. I think there should be consequences for him. I'm not sure about the refs who are supposed to be on the field.
I would side with you there. And the interesting thing is, Simeon's quarterback, I just read a little bit ago, he is actually saying he doesn't want Nazareth to be reprimanded whatsoever. He wants the team that beat them to go on and finish their season in the state championship. He said they beat us fair and square and they should move on. But he does want the adults to be held accountable. I'm kind of with you, Amy. I think the one on the sidelines, I mean, be stripped. If you're bringing out, I mean, come on, that's like, I don't know, is that like a police officer coming out to something and try to become in charge, like at a concert or something, so we can get front row tickets up to the front of the show? And that's just abusing your power.
But I disagree slightly. I think the referees that were already on the sidelines, if you don't do what needs to happen to get that man back in the stands to tell him get out of here, like, what are you doing?
That's
here?
That's true. Like, who else is like the CEO of a game?
Yes, it's the referee. Right. And I feel it's incumbent upon you to get him off the field.
Yeah, I mean, they should at least maybe use it as a teaching moment, maybe suspend them. Because again, if you're a referee, you should probably know that there shouldn't be another referee on the sidelines. Tell him to go, tell him to change, do something. But number one, don't talk to him and ask to be influenced on any plays.
What I will say is, as much as this dad irritates me, I agree with the Simeon quarterback in that's
a very like sports person like thing to say.
Wasn't it? Yes. Wasn't it? It very mature. He sounds like an NFL player because at the end of the day, the game shouldn't have been close enough for these calls to change the tide, which means that you may have been outmatched or you didn't outplay your opponent well enough for these types of things to, because I mean, if you're crushing somebody, it doesn't matter what else is going on.
Right. If there was this huge point spread, right? Yeah. It was just huge. And it wasn't any question. And it's like, well, this dad came out there yelling and trying to influence things. Fine. But it's different. It's a different case. If it's like a huge point difference versus a really close game.
Right.
To me, it's different.
And it was an unbelievable game. I mean, that's probably the most unfortunate thing is that it was such a thrilling back and forth game that just came down to a couple of weird calls at the end of the game. And, you know, you'd hate to see something be taken away from a team just because of a flaw of a call. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is, I mean, emotions got high. Nazareth, as soon as they won, as soon as time expired, everyone from the bench came out of the field, started celebrating. There was some, you know, smack talking on both sides, but I'm not going to hold anyone accountable for that for sports because you're in your element, you're in the emotion. It's a huge game.
Right.
You know, things happen. But the cool thing was that quarterback, Alante Brown, he was very emotional. He was down on his hands and knees. His season had just ended. And Michael Love, a player from the other team, came by, kind of comforted him. Apparently they had been friends growing up. They talked afterwards. So I think Alante Brown does have some friends on the other team and just some good relationships. And there were a lot of those exchanges once the handshake line had finished. Nazareth guys coming over to Simeon guys saying great game. So that was always kind of cool to see where the high emotions of, you know, the meathead sports things going on where people are screaming and yelling and showing their emotions. But then after all it's said and done, going and talking to your opponent and kind of civilly saying, you know, how much you enjoyed the experience.
Yeah. I love how the maturity came from the kids.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Right. You're right.
The parents are being ridiculous. The adults who are supposed to be leading by example were being unethical and emotional and doing all this stuff. Meanwhile, the kids are being so stand up to each other.
Absolutely. It's crazy, too, because that got buried with all the craziness of the adults being childish in this story. Joe Brand does sports on Saturdays with me when I'm doing news. Thank you for staying up late with us. Oh, Joe Brand just got engaged.
Yes, he did.
no babies on the horizon.
The story, huh?
You say, right. Somehow that was going to make it to the story. You knew that, bro. And so, but I wonder, when Joe Brand has little Joe Brand, will you be that dad? On the sidelines, you know, with the headphones on, acting like you're one of the coaches.
I've said this before, and I'll say it again. I just don't look good in stripes. I'll never be that guy.
Joe Brand is our weekend sports anchor. Thank you for calling in, man. I appreciate you.
Thanks a lot, guys. Enjoy that wine.
Appreciate
we
it.
Shall. Bye,
we
Joe.
Shall. Bye, see ya.
It's Amy Goof, Dumb and T-Pongo, WGN Nightside. It's 12:50. We'll be back in a moment.
Talk over that song. It's so good.
I never thought I'd hear this record as bumper music on WGN Radio.
Right?
This brings me so much joy.
Okay, that is the question I want to ask you. Yes. What are the songs that you have gotten on the radio that you've been like, I just won? This, I feel like, is a good one.
Wow. You know what? I don't think I've really tried it. I haven't gone the limit. There are some songs that I would love to hear on the station, but I don't have the gall to do it just yet. I need some more seniority before I play number two on Nipsey Hussle's Victory Lap. I can't even say the title.
Yeah.
But the edited version of number two on Nipsey Hussle's Victory Lap. If we play that, then I've won.
I got a radio edit of a Wu-Tang song on. I felt really good about that.
Which one?
I was really nervous about it.
Because you didn't know how good the edit was?
I kept listening to it and I was like, are we sure it is the radio edit? Because like the third word is not acceptable on the radio. And if it plays, we're doomed. It is so bad if that word goes. So.
And people don't know, we have literally like 30 seconds to make these decisions. So if it doesn't work, it is what it is. Yeah. Finger on that dump button.
But I've never had to hit the dump button over a song.
Usually over a guest or something.
I've hit the dump button over a guest and a caller. The caller was really nice and he was making a great point, and then he dropped his phone and he swore. So you could hear the phone go like bonk, 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 and like fall. You could just imagine he like dropped it. He was in the car. He dropped the phone and then he started swearing. And I was like, man, I got to drop you. But he was making a really good point before that. I had a guest when I was doing really late night radio. I had a guest come in. And I didn't realize that he was drunk until he started talking. Like, he was just talking to me before the... And I try not to talk too much to the guests about the thing they're there to talk about, because I don't want them to, spoil the story.
Yes,
I want them to save it for the air. So we were just kind of making a little small talk. How are you? Thanks for coming in so late. Da, da, da. And then the microphone is on, and he's slurring. And I'm like, oh, man, this guy's drunk. So I was like, okay, I'll just do this really fast, and we'll be done. And then he, like, drops... Not only an F-bomb, but it was like, you know, you can attach that word to a lot of other words to make it more decorative. And he really went for it. And I was like, man,
he went all out.
You cannot say that.
I know Cash is over there sweating bullets because she doesn't want me to tell this story.
Tell
she doesn't care.
Tell me what.
I don't care. Go for it. It don't matter to me.
So she booked this amazing artist.
Okay.
Tell me about this artist. You got to bring him on. We interview him. So dope. Great guy. great music. Mm-hmm. Could not stop cursing.
Oh, that's the
couldn't
worst.
Stop.
He only cursed like 12. Two times, but I caught both on the dump button, so you never okay. know if you play back on.
No, it was like 4 or 5.
Oof. It was not 4 or 5.
I mean,
5.
One
so
is
I had
too
to
many.
Do the dump button.
It felt, okay, you're the one who did. You remember how many times you pressed it. He exactly. caught himself a few times. Oof. He was like, man, that stuff makes yeah. me really happy. He was really excited. And I was, I don't know why, I was just so nervous that night. That was an interesting night because I was supposed to be co-hosting with someone. They had gotten, is that what happened? They gotten sick? Oh, no, they were late. There was a shooting on I-57 that
was,
day.
Yeah, she was late.
She was late because there was a shooting on I-57. Wow. She was coming from South, and traffic was crazy. She got late. I was like, it's cool. So, yeah, you know, I flew solo.
Sure.
And then the guest was there, so I was kind of on edge for the entire show, and I was in my mind. I think I manifested. I said, something's going to go wrong.
Right, right.
Something's going to happen.
You thought it into existence.
Yes, and it was Murphy's Law, and then he came in, and but it was good, man. Yeah. Shout out to, oh my God, what's that brother's name? I ain't even
Apollo Mighty.
Apollo Mighty. Shout out to Apollo Mighty, man.
When I first started doing radio here at WGN, so 10 years ago, there was a guest that I had who was so brilliant, but so nervous. He had never been on the radio.
Oh, yeah.
He was brilliant. He had so much information. He was like a political science expert. He was so interesting, and he had a really unique point of view. And so I was really excited about this interview. And he was so nervous. He had notes, and he was like shaking the paper. He was terrified. So in between, and when he would stop speaking, I would turn his mic off because he was shaking so much with this paper in his hand.
Oh, wow.
We go to break, and he's saying, am I doing okay? I was like, you're killing it. It's great. It's great. It's great. And I said, so don't be nervous. You're doing okay. And he's, you know, drops an F-bomb. He says, but he doesn't do it on the air. Gotcha. It's on the break.
Okay.
And then he's kind of repeating that as like a mantra.
Right.
As if going like, okay, screw it, but not screw it. Right. He's like, okay, all right. And he's kind of doing that. And I was like, are you good? And then we come back. And he's like, okay, I'm good. I've got it out of my system. And because he had sat there repeating it, that's the first word out of his mouth.
Oh, no.
He just like said it again. I was like, ugh. And I hadn't even given like station ID yet. I hadn't even said like, hey, Amy Goo with WG Radio. I hadn't even said that. He like, mic is on and he just goes there. And that's the first word people hear. And I was like, man.
Oh, my God.
I dumped the audio, but I'm so flustered because I was new and I really didn't know how to deal with that. So I was flustered. I didn't know what to do. So I'm like turning microphones on and off and just like, and like I end up sort of swearing kind of a little bit, but it was really chaotic right then.
Oh, no. That's it. My first newscast when I first started in radio, I said the city of Chicago, but I didn't say the city. What word rhymes with city? And so a caller called in and said, no, I didn't. Didn't say that. Nope.
No, I did not. You cannot prove it.
You can't prove it. Nope.
That's not what I said.
There's no rewind button. But now, because I'm here and that station is miles and miles away.
Mirror.
Yes.
Yeah.
I said it.
Whoops.
That's what happened. Whoops. What are you going to do?
I have done something similar. Like just gotten tongue-tied and said the wrong thing.
It happens.
And then you're like, at the time, I didn't even realize I had said a terrible word. And then later I was like, oh, wait a minute. I realized what I said. Yeah. Whoopsie.
Well, we've been drinking wine, so hopefully we don't let any other F-bombs fly the air. Amy, this has been fun.
It's always so fun to do radio with you. Let's do it again tomorrow.
Let's do it.
All right. So let's go hide this wine somewhere and we can have wine again tomorrow night.
Let's do it. Fun. We're on 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. tomorrow.
That's
Amy
right.
Guth and I. You guys tune in. You can follow me at Domati, D-O-M-E-T-I _ Amy Guth at Amy Guth.
That's right. I'm Amy Guth on everything.
Yeah. And I'm Domati _ on everything because there's a guy in Brazil with my name.
Is there really?
Yes.
Wow. There are a couple of other Amy Guths.
Really?
There's a lawyer in Pittsburgh and a realtor in Breckenridge and an adult sort of dancer that's moving into adult films in Indiana.
Wow. And they're close by.
Yeah. That's a lot of Amy Guths.
We'll find them and destroy them. It's Domati Pugo, Amy Guth. We're back tomorrow for WGN Nightside, 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. And we can't promise you we won't be drinking wine on the air.